Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Tuesday, June 21st. Derek Van Riper here with Ian Kahn today. Ian stepping in for Al as we talk prospects like we do each and every Tuesday on this episode. We've got several promotions to talk about. We got a couple highly coveted prospects returning to the big leagues, a couple injury updates to pass along, trending players as we have each and every week. And our level roundup will focus on some players at the low A level, along with a couple of big picture questions. Ian, thanks for stepping in. How you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm doing great, and so fun to be working with you. Missing Nando DeFino, of course, but excited to talk prospects today and talk about guys who, frankly, I've been following, you've been following, we've all been following for so many years, and they're now here. It's like they're here. It's kind of fun.
I am predicting right now that we will be accused of betrayal in the first 3 minutes of Under the Radar on Wednesday.
Count on it. That's for sure. But he has been mentioned from the top. From the top, you are missed, Nando DeFino.
So let's start with Riley Green. He's among the prospects who have been recently promoted since this show happened a week ago. And with Riley Green, we're seeing a lot of patience very early on in his big league career. In the very brief time he was at AAA this season, he actually cut his K rate a bit from where it was last year. And for his age, he was a 20-year-old last year when he reached AAA for the first time, had really impressive numbers over a 40-game stretch. Clearly a guy that we have a ton of long-term interest in. But what is the short-term interest? What's the short-term expectation for you with Riley Green getting this opportunity now in Detroit and probably staying up for good unless he falls on his face?
Yeah, I think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be really good. I also think there's no better time if you were going to trade Riley Green than like right now, this moment. Because he can get you back in a dynasty league. And I would assume that many people who are listening to the Prospect Podcast live in the dynasty league world. I think that the upside on him over the course of a career is really immense. A top, you know, kind of like a second round player, right? I mean, DVR, is that right? It's like second round. He'll give you possibly 28 home runs with a 290 average, and he'll steal you 15 bases, though his gait is so strange. I don't know if you've ever noticed the way he runs. He kind of runs weird. He doesn't run like a center fielder or like a guy who's going to steal bases. Did you ever catch that on Riley Green?
Yeah, you mentioned it, I think, on Under the Radar, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so. And I think the other thing that's surprising is you see the Fangraphs tools grades are always really helpful for me just to get a sense of what talent evaluators think of a player. And it surprises me when I look at the stolen base results that Riley Green has had in the upper levels of the minor leagues compared to a 40 grade on his speed. But I wonder if part of it is the way he looks while running. Is it timed speed, or is it just the way he looks? Like, I'm kind of curious as we get more Statcast data from him, if he ends up being better in sprint speed than we would expect for someone with a 40 grade on his speed.
Okay, so if it's 40 grade speed, that just makes a lot of sense, because he just doesn't look like, I'd never seen the 40 grade speed. I know that he did have a lot of success stealing bases. I think that there's a feeling that he's going to come up and steal bases. He just doesn't look like a guy who's going to steal bases to me. When he hits a home run, like watching him run between second and third when he's in his gait, just is a very awkward gait. All that being said, I think he's a outfield four for me for the rest of the season, maybe even a three. Could be back in the minor leagues too. So, but what I was saying about the dynasty league, like if you could get like three great players, if you're going for it and you could get three great players, including not all, like not just like Max Scherzer, but like Max Scherzer, Teoscar Hernandez, and Carlos Correa kind of thing. And if you're going for it, and that's what you need, that stuff, like you could get that much for him. I think that's the point. I'm not even advocating that you should, but I'm saying that right now you can get that much for him, similar to what Dylan Carlson was able to fetch you when he first came up. And now you couldn't get Scherzer for Dylan Carlson at this point, probably. Well, maybe you could. Maybe that's who you could get for him. But so there's the upside question, the selling question. But what do you think of Riley Green, DVR? Like, what do you think he's going to be for the rest of the year, just in redraft, or, you know, how's he going to help the team?
Yeah, I think you can probably set the expectation around like a top 50 outfielder in redraft leagues. That's a pretty fair place. Really, he can do a little bit of everything. I think the power is going to show up pretty quickly. He'll be high in the order. They're probably going to be better than the league's worst offense the rest of the way, even if they're still a bottom five offense the rest of the way, right? They were putrid to this point, but they'll be better with Green and with a few guys maybe bouncing back over the course of the season. The way it was asked to me, I was on the Saturday RotoWire show with our friends Clay Link and James Anderson, nice and they guys. Said in redraft, they said, awesome guys, two of my best friends in this industry. They asked me what I was going to do with Riley Green in Fab. They said, is he a 40% of your budget sort of player? And I said, well, probably not for me. Part of it's the philosophy with how I spend Fab. Part of it's how I built a lot of my teams this year in auction and salary cap situations. I went really heavy with bats in most of my leagues. So for me to spend 40% of my budget on a hitter, it's just not going to happen because I've got an excess of bats in those leagues anyway. So I was more in the 10 to 15% range. And I told them, I said, odds of me getting him are slim. Someone else is going to probably throw a lot more fab at Riley Green. And I get it. We've talked about this as kind of a recurring topic probably for the last 3 or so years since we started doing these shows. I think there's still a lot to figure out with the noise in prospect projections especially. But the projections really help ground you. If you're the kind of person who can be too high on prospects and then you're disappointed later, if you just take a look at the rest of season projections, Riley Green, according to the BatX, is projected to hit 247 with a 311 OBP and a 375 slugging percentage. That is very replaceable in our game.
Yeah, now, it is.
The thing about it is, I think it is both more likely that Riley Green wildly exceeds that projection and that he wildly underperforms that projection than a veteran player with the same projection. So just as an example, Jesus Aguilar is projected to be a similar hitter by slash line to Riley Green. It's more likely to me, and I think data would back this up, that Aguilar hits that mark or closer to that mark. Green could go way over, he could go way under. Obviously, he could go slightly over or slightly under as well. But I just think the likelihood of the extremes are more likely when we're talking about a player who has not played in the big leagues before. And that everything going right scenario is why people throw large piles of fab at a player like Green. So I don't know if that long-winded explanation of how my mind works helped anyone or only added to the confusion.
No. It's good. It's good because it look, I am a huge fan of getting prospects in fantasy baseball 3 weeks before they're getting called up for $4 out of $1,000, right? Or $14, guys who are sitting on the wire. And you just say, you know what? I think they're coming up in 3 weeks. That's the best way to do it, right? You don't want to spend $613 on Josh Lowe. Because you're buying something and you're spending so much on the idea that they might be Jose Fernandez or, you know, Mike Trout the second time he came up. But he's more likely to be Mike Trout the first time he came up or Aaron Judge the first time he came up, which is just really struggling with a new level. I want to add a little pin in this and say something kind of weird. The person who I think is going to be helped the most by this coming up is Spencer Torkelson. I think that Spencer Torkelson is about to turn it around because Riley Green is there. We talk about this on Under the Radar early on. We talked about this, that I look at baseball like you're a freshman, you're a sophomore, you're a junior, you're a senior, and it's broken up into like 4 years. Each year is like, you know, a career of 16 years. And Torkelson in the spring, if we looked at what Green and Torkelson did in the spring, they were awesome. Right? I mean, DVR, they were hitting in the 340s, 350s, both of them. Then Green breaks a toe, fractures a foot, which was terrible. And Torkelson goes up alone, and he's the only kid. And he's struggled all season. He's just been terrible. And he's cheap as hell right now. Like, you can get him in a dynasty league for a price, and I would recommend trying to get him, actually. Similar to like what Andrew Vaughn went through. And now we see what Andrew Vaughn is doing, and which makes me laugh about you and Andrew Vaughn and XFL and, you know, wanting Andrew Vaughn. I think that the fact that Green is there now is going to make Torkelson feel like he's more of a veteran, and he's going to feel more confident and more comfortable. And so much of being successful in baseball is confidence and comfort. And I think that we're going to see the biggest beneficiary of Green is going to be Spencer Torkelson. Does that sound crazy to you, or does that make a little bit of sense?
No, I mean, I think having someone else that you've played with at multiple levels kind of going through the same adjustments that you are going through right now, I think that's probably something that makes a difference. I mean, I think with Torkelson too, and with any young player, I like the process stats a lot if I'm trying to take that long view. Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson and guys that come up that if you just don't know, if you don't know what they're going to do right away, that's normal. Like, it's hard to figure this out. But what you can look at is stuff like O-swing percentage with Spencer Torkelson. He's not chasing a lot of pitches outside the zone. He's got a double-digit walk rate so far. The K rate's under 30% for Torkelson, which for a guy in his big league debut in this environment where strikeouts are up is actually pretty good. I know the power hasn't been there, the run production hasn't been there yet, but he's making pretty good decisions in terms of swinging at balls and strikes. That, to me, bodes really well for his long-term success. So I'm looking at things like that with Green. I'm looking at some underlying numbers like that sprint speed that I mentioned in passing. Is he faster than people expect? Watching for max exit velo, watching for barrel rate over time. When he connects, does he at least hit the ball hard in the right angles? I think that's going to be important. And I think that's how you can tell if you've got someone who becomes a good long-term buy low if they go through a half season's worth of struggles as a rookie. I think the Vaughn comparison to Torkelson, that's been what I've kind of had in my mind the entire time this season. I don't have Spencer Torkelson on any redraft teams. This is not a victory lap. This is just the profile where I said, yeah, I like him long term, but I think if I'm going to chase the mid-late round first baseman, I want someone who's done it for a little while. I'll take the old boring guy in this case, in this spot, and I'll be the one that maybe gets Spencer Torkelson a year from now around pick 200 in redraft. I think that's about where Andrew Vaughn was going. And I think that still is where I want to go. I think the other example of looking at small bits of information and trying to make a good long-term decision comes from CJ Abrams. He's back up. Manny Machado dealing with an ankle sprain right now. You and I play in a league we talked about on this show a bunch of times, Maki. It's a 16-team keeper league. It's got some contracts. Everybody gets 10 prospects. And CJ Abrams was a prospect that I've held on to for a couple of years. And I didn't want to trade him, but I decided based on what we saw in his first 21 games that I was comfortable moving him. It was a trade that ended up getting me back Jose Ramirez probably a month or so ago now. And Ramirez is unkeepable, and Abrams is keepable for several years with extensions. Yeah, it could be a long time.
Yeah.
But there's a couple things to think about. One, we do play to win. Right. Mm-hmm. When you're positioned to win a league, especially a 16-team league, you have to say, hey, I like this guy in the long run, but I'm getting Jose Ramirez back. So that's kind of a big deal. And it takes something to get something when you're talking about great players.
Absolutely.
Why I was willing to trade CJ Abrams is that I saw an O-swing percentage above 40%. That's very high. That's like the Javier Baez range. It doesn't mean that's who CJ Abrams is forever. I should be crystal clear about that. His first 20 big league games, and he's missed a ton of time in the minor leagues with injuries, and he made the leap to the big leagues from AA. But I saw an approach that wasn't great, a lot of ground balls initially, and the quality of his contact was also very low. Low hard hit rate, not surprisingly, a low barrel rate. And I thought it might just take a little longer than we want for Abrams to be the superstar who does everything. The reason you would be on the other side of that trade, though, if you're not playing for this year, you're probably getting some speed right away, and you're probably getting that power later. I'm not going to take any player, look at his first 21 games and say, that's who he is forever. I just saw it as he's probably not going to be as much of a short-term boost to a contending roster as I would like him to be, I want to try and win the league again, so I'm willing to make the sacrifice.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm referring to as far as just looking at some of the underlying numbers and trying to make a decision. And I could be loud wrong, because CJ Abrams went down to AAA, was really good at that level, right? Yeah, top seven dominated. Homers in 30 games, had 10 steals in those 30 games, slash line looked really good.
Yeah, hit like 370 or something.
But it was Triple A El Paso.
No, it's, look,
it's El Paso. Look, it's El Paso. Yeah. It's the PCL, and it's one of the most hitter friendly environments in the PCL. So he might come back up and still look like the guy he was earlier this season, and it could still be a back and forth for a year or two, and then he could be a star a year or two from now, or he could be a star
5 years from now. I mean, that's also true. Look, you won last year. You went all in. I came in second place. I got to talk briefly about that league, and you went all in, used every chip, and took it from, I think, from Dr. Tom and myself in the last weekend. And this year we're doing it again, right? You're at 139. I'm at 138.5 or something. And this year I'm not holding chips. This year I'm doing the same thing that you're doing. And I think it's right. I think that's what you're supposed to do. I think getting Jose Ramirez is great. My thing about CJ Abrams is I love CJ Abrams so much. It's like obviously Corbin Carroll is awesome. All these guys are awesome, but I've just had a love for CJ Abrams ever since I saw him interviewed when he was 18 years old, sitting with his parents at the major league draft when he was drafted, I think, fifth by the San Diego Padres. I love CJ Abrams. I just think he's makeup is out of this world. His love of the game, everything about him. But you know, you got to give something to get something. You have to, and you got probably, if not the MVP, the number two in the MVP right now with Aaron Judge. That's what you have to do. I gave up Yuri Perez for a more expensive Mike Trout. And Yuri Perez, I traded him in that same league. And I took your line. It was before you. It was actually, I think I made that trade before you made the trade for Jose Ramirez. I went out and got Trout because it was like, you know what? I'm not going to hold Yuri Perez. I'm not going to wait for the 3-4 years for it all to kind of come to fruition. And but that's what you got to do. If you have a chance to win, you've got to make those trades. But what I would say is, and I think you did fine on that trade. I think getting Jose Ramirez is awesome. Get value in those trades is what I would recommend. Like, just get value. Like, if you're going to trade Riley Green in a situation like this, get enough that you're going to put yourself in a position not just to win for this year, but to win for the next 2 years. Next 3 years. That's why when I was talking about that. So I think that's a big part of it. CJ Abrams, I think he's going to be great. I wanted to pick him up in all leagues this weekend. Unfortunately, in our main event, Rob Mershak and I were not able to pick him up because we had picked up Luis Garcia 3 weeks earlier. So he was replacing somebody because we had to move Chris Taylor to the outfield because Mookie Betts went down, and then we put Luis Garcia into the middle infield spot. So picking up CJ Abrams in NFBC did not make sense, but that's the kind of player that you want, I think, in a redraft right now. I think it's going to be hard to get him. But even in a 10-team league or a 12-team league, that's the kind of guy I would pick up and throw on the bench because you never know. He could be John Birdie. He could steal 6 bases in a week, I think. I think that's possible. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, you give them the right matchups. I think it's entirely possible. I think in order, I think the categories you're going to get from CJ Abrams are probably steals, then average, then runs, then RBIs, and then homers. And long term, again, homers could move up a lot in terms of that priority. But steals are so hard to get right now. We were talking about it just in the sense of looking for players who are undervalued on rates and barrels yesterday. And most of the guys who steal a lot of bases or are projected to steal a lot of bases the rest of the way are stars. You're not getting a deal on most of those players. So just the fact that Abrams can help you in a category that most players can't, the Birdie comparison, I think, is actually a very fair place to put the baseline. I think you could look at Abrams and he could be an everyday player or close to it the rest of the way. If he holds his own at the plate, they'll find a spot for him. Defensively, they'll move him around once everyone gets healthy. He has that path. So it's definitely more of a what could go right situation because of the steals. I don't know if I'd go much smaller than a 12-team league on Abrams or Green right now. I think it comes down to how big the bench is. Some of those shallow leagues have really small benches.
Well, right, fine. If it's a small bench, then no. I guess that would be right on a 10-team. But 12-team, I don't know, man. I've got a real love for CJ Abrams. He also, I saw him hit a home run in AAA. I guess it was about 5 days ago. And I was talking to Rob about picking up Abrams this weekend in the main event, even before Machado went down, just because I saw him hit a home run. It was like a low slider that was like at the socks, and he just hit it like 450 feet. It was really impressive. I was like, wow, look at that power. He's also really tall. Is he like 6'2", DVR?
Yeah, 6'2".
6'2", yeah. I mean, he's just tall. He's like a slightly shorter O'Neal Cruz, so I guess we're going to talk about next.
Yeah, let's talk about O'Neal Cruz. We're looking at this guy as one of the more unusual prospects that we've probably ever seen, just in terms of his height. Debuted at the end of last season, of course, but a 6'7 shortstop, that's pretty unusual. And I think there are plenty of skeptics out there that say he's got a rocket arm, he's very big for a shortstop, maybe he's a right fielder long term. We can put those questions aside. They don't matter as much for our purposes as they do for, you know, like real life evaluation purposes. And by the way, O'Neal Cruz, I heard an intentional talk on Monday. He's named after Paul O'Neal, former Yankee.
What?
Yeah, I never knew that.
I did not know that.
So similar question to what we were talking about with Green and Abrams. Now that O'Neal Cruz is back up with the Pirates, where do we set expectations for the rest of this season? I mean, if you're choosing between Abrams and Cruz, to me, one of the things that's possibly a pretty big difference is that I think Cruz's playing time, if you had to project it right now, is safer at the moment.
I would agree with that, actually. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Cruz is definitely safer than Abrams. So I just love Abrams, right? I'm stupid Abrams. Someone asked me for him in a trade yesterday for Zach Wheeler, and I was like, can't do it. Would never do that. I think it was straight up for Dylan Cease. And I was like, sorry, just it's the only place I got him and I'm not trading him. I just can't, you know, sometimes you just can't. We found another way around it. We'll talk about that tomorrow on Under the Radar. We're going to do a big trade talk, hopefully tomorrow on Under the Radar is the idea, talking about trading and really how, especially now during this time of year, how to make the best trades. O'Neal Cruz is fascinating, tantalizing. Gosh, I think he could be really, really good. I mean, if you look at his exit velocity, it is verging on Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, right? Like he came up at the end of last season, the last weekend of the season, and he hit like 118 miles per hour off the bat, bomb. You know, we'll see how he does. He really struggled in the minors when he didn't get called up right away. It's so much baseball, such an emotional game. Like you got to be in the right headspace. And he was feeling disappointed, like, I should be up there. And he wasn't, some argument that he wasn't giving it everything he had, possibly. But now he's up. And I think he could be fabulous. He could be fabulous. And you're right. You're absolutely right. If you had to choose between O'Neal Cruz right now and CJ Abrams right now in redraft, you got to take O'Neal Cruz. The question becomes, is it O'Neal Cruz or is it Riley Green? You can have either one of them, DVR. You can have O'Neal Cruz. You can have Riley Green. And you have an equal need because you have Chris Taylor. So Chris Taylor is either going to play shortstop for you or outfield for you. Who are you taking? I have my answer, but who are you taking?
Well-crafted scenario. And I think I would actually take O'Neal Cruz over Riley Green for the rest of this season. I think there's more swing and miss risk for a guy who's 6'7", than there is for Riley Green. But I think when you factor in how hard he hits the ball, that could make up some of the difference. That could make Cruz slightly better.
This is fun.
I think the Pirates lineup is better than the Tigers lineup right now, too. I think the supporting cast makes a difference on the margins. We're talking about two players that are both really interesting.
I'm going Riley Green. And this is a fun little bet for us. Really, it's $1. It's a $1 bet. Riley Green versus O'Neal Cruz rest of the season. I'm going Riley Green. One thing I think is that the Tigers are about to get a lot better. And here's why. Because I think Javier Baez is about to get a lot better. And here's why. He stole a base this weekend. What does that mean? For me, when a player who can steal bases is not stealing bases and is struggling with the bat, what you typically see is when they start trying to steal bases, they're going, I'm shaking this up. I don't care if I get thrown out. I got to do something because this ain't working. So when he stole that base, I think it was like Thursday or Friday he stole a base. I went, oh, he's ready to go. Javier Baez wants to play. Saw it also with like Anthony Rizzo when he was struggling a couple of weeks ago. He was like down. It wasn't going very well. He started stealing bases. It changes your mindset in the game. Now, back to Riley Green versus O'Neal Cruz. I'm going to take Riley Green. And the reason is I think his chances of ending up back in the minor leagues are less than O'Neal Cruz's chances of ending up back in the minor leagues. I think his chance of disaster is much lower than O'Neal Cruz. I think the book on O'Neal Cruz has not been written yet. Once that book is written, that transition. Like, I think there's a chance, a bigger chance that O'Neill Cruz turns into Jared Kelnick than Riley Green. Riley Green's hit tool is really good. What's the hit tool on Riley Green in Fangraphs? Is it like 65, 60, 70?
It's definitely better than whatever Cruz has. I'll take a look and see how big the gap is.
I would guess it's at least 60. It's got to be. The hit tool's got to be 60.
It's a present 45 and a future 60. And Cruz, they had listed 45. As a present 30, future 40. How much of that, I wonder, is just the size? I wonder how much of that gets kind of mixed in. Because I know that there's a fear that hitters this big are just going to have holes in plate coverage that they simply can't figure out against big league pitching with top-level stuff and top-level command.
It's so, this is sad. Now I'm rooting against O'Neill Cruz because of this little bet that I've created. You didn't even agree to it.
For a dollar?
For a dollar. But I think you're right. And I think he's going to run into trouble. I think O'Neill Cruz is going to have some trouble. I think he also could explode and be, you know, the best player in baseball, right? I don't think Riley Green has the upside of being the best hitter in baseball, but O'Neill Cruz could be one of the best fantasy players if he can really do it. But I think that the jump from the minor leagues to the major leagues, I like Riley Green's hit tool a lot. I don't think 45 is right. I think he's at 50 at this point. I just look at his walks over the weekend. I mean, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I mean, how many times did he walk in the last 3 days? Like you put down here showing patience early on. I think he's at least walked three times, maybe even four. He's not going to chase outside the zone. We'll see. I mean, they're both great players. I'm taking Riley Green. If I have that open spot and I can get him for free, I'm taking Riley Green. Unless, of course, you need speed. And then Riley Green is a 40. You know, they're both great. They're both great. But Green is the safer bet of the two. So for rest of season, if I had the free pickup, I would go Green, Cruz, Abrams of those top three.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm Cruz, Green, Abrams, but it's very close between really all three. It's just a question of if you had to choose, you got to pick one and you only got one spot. You got to go somewhere.
Nando DeFino putting in the rundown that he's seeing us doing a show without him. He's already starting it. It's already beginning. You can count tomorrow on the Under the Radar show. The first 5 minutes of the show will be Nando DeFino making fun of us.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the 10 minutes of Yermin Mercedes to the Giants. So I got
that's going to be huge.
First stuff all up to the first ad all sorted out already in my mind. I know how it's all going to go.
You know, wait, just to say this now, that might work, Yermin Mercedes in San Francisco. Why not?
I think
I could see that working.
It bodes well for Nando, especially that a team that I think we would all consider to be smart, that they're on him. Bodes well for Nando in this case.
Yeah. I mean, I could see him being their everyday DH on that team. I could see that happening. He got hot. He might be able to do some stuff. Anyway, we are surely going to be discussing that on tomorrow's show. And if you don't listen Under the Radar, you should give it a listen because Nando DeFino, that guy's a lot of fun. Makes people laugh out loud.
He does.
Yep.
Some other promotions to talk about briefly. Jeter Downs up for the Red Sox. Been a really rough 2-year stretch for him since he was acquired. The strikeout rate has been really high for him at AAA. He's played 152 games now at Worcester. 25 homers and 29 steals, though. So he's doing things we really like, but it's with some ugly supporting numbers. An average below the Mendoza line, a sub-300 OBP, yeah, and even a sub-400 slugging percentage. Like it's hard to hit 25 home runs and slug less than 400. So how much of a long-term concern do you have about what's happened to him over really the past season and a half now at the AAA level?
I am a lot more confident in Jaron Duran this year for Boston than Jeter Downs. I think it's going to be a while, but hey, I like the 25 home runs, 29 stolen bases. DVR, what do you think about stolen bases in the minor leagues? I don't know that it translates.
I don't think it translates as well as we'd like it to. I think getting the same reads and jumps off of big league batteries is harder. Mm-hmm. I think getting the green light is also more difficult depending on your team context. Some teams aren't going to run as much because they think they can produce runs without even taking the risk. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. And then it's also harder to get on base. And Jeter Downs is already having enough difficulty getting on base at AAA, where he's an AL-only league sort of guy, just a last person on your roster sort of filler for me until we see improvement. He's probably not going to be up in the big leagues that long. I imagine he really gets sent back down.
Because Kike Hernandez is coming back, and that's the Kike Hernandez spot. I think Jeter Downs will eventually be in the major leagues, but he has not shown enough in the minor leagues for us to get excited about him in any kind of redraft. Even AL-only, I don't know that he provides much more than two times a week possibly playing if he's up, and what will he do with that? And then, you know, there's a chance that he goes crazy and all of a sudden, but I don't think so. I mean, if you're hitting 200 versus AAA pitchers, as you always point out, the AAA pitchers are not the same level, like not remotely the same level, not even as the AA pitchers. So I'm not sure that it plays.
Here's the question. Josh Lowe is back up for the Rays, and Manuel Margot is hurt. You mentioned Jaron Duran. I think the Red Sox are finally going to let Duran play more. I thought they were going to do it, I think, a month ago when they called him up and they gave him the quick return to AAA. I think that might have been when JBJ was on the paternity list for a few days. I thought, oh, this is the window. Like, this is the time. Who do you like more for the rest of the season, especially with the possibility of a Margot injury opening up more playing time for Lowe?
Definitely. Margot could be out for the year. I was watching the game when it happened. There's so much to talk about with that one play, Aaron Hicks standing at the plate and not running when you're hitting the way you're hitting. Don't do that. But as soon as Margot came down, I said to my wife, I said he tore his ACL. Like that's what it looked like to me. Like he looks like he's gone. So I think Josh Lowe is going to play. You've been a Josh Lowe guy for a number of years. Like you've always had a, well, I mean, I'm making an assumption on that based on knowing that you drafted him in XFL a number of years ago and you followed him closely. He's very tall too. He's got a big, long swing. And also he got very frustrated last night when he struck out. I didn't like seeing that. I was like, just relax. It's okay. You know, I know you want to do well, but just play the game. What do you think Josh Lowe is going to be? He's going to play. He's going to have time. The Braves are going to dive. That team is not making, if they make the playoffs, it'll be just by the skin of their teeth because that team is just decimated by injury. Kiermaier's out again. Margot's out. So Lowe's going to play every day. What do you think? What is he going to do for you?
I think it's a little bit of power and speed for sure. He wasn't making bad swing decisions when he was up earlier this season. The production wasn't there, so I understand why they sent him down. But a 22.8% O-swing percentage is very good for a player getting his first extended look at the big leagues.
Where was he missing it then? Because he hit like 69, like .069.
It was strange, like a 38.7% K rate. You don't usually see that K rate with a low O-swing percentage. Uh-huh. I think he's always going to be the kind of guy that strikes out a decent amount because there is something in that plate coverage that's off. He's struck out pretty much everywhere he's played, right? His best minor league strikeout rate was 25.4% at AA. He was 21 when he did that, though. So age to level, very appropriate. Not bad numbers there. I think with low, who's the big leaguer that he's probably most like? This is a good question.
6'4". He looked like Kyle Tucker at the plate.
Yeah.
Your boy, who Kyle you Tucker. Love. And you've been loving Kyle Tucker forever. I mean, you love that kid.
Okay. Maybe Kyle Tucker's a good example of what could happen and how long it could take to get there. Because even when we first saw Kyle Tucker back in 2018, it didn't go well from a performance perspective, but
no.
Underlying numbers, again, O-swing percentage was good that year, right? 25.3%, wasn't making terrible decisions, came back, was kind of an up-and-down guy in 2019, came up in the shortened season, showed power, showed speed, and then, of course, you know, 2021, last year, made the leap and became some of the people were taking in the first round
of
the season. Like he got to that level. I don't know if it happens quickly. I think with Lowe,
I don't think it does.
If I'm looking at Lowe versus O'Neill Cruz, who do I think is going to return more roto value for the rest of this season?
O'Neill Cruz for me.
I think it's Cruz again because I still think the playing time is a little safer, but I don't think Lowe should be ignored in that conversation.
I mean, no, not ignored. No. And actually, can I say this? Because this is a prospect show and I love trading. I love trading. Trading so much fun. It's the best part of the game. One of the best parts of the game. Go get Josh Lowe in Dynasty Leagues right now. He could not be less, you know, his value could not be lower. Like, these are the guys you buy. You go buy Josh Lowe. You go buy Spencer Torkelson. You don't buy him. You don't buy Riley Greene right now. You buy Riley Greene in 2 months when he's hitting, if he's hitting 210, right? Like, it's just a good buying opportunity. I'm looking at Josh Lowe's AAA numbers last year. 22 home runs and 470 at-bats, 402 at-bats. It's good. It's good. 61 walks, 123 strikeouts, 381 OBP, 291 average, 916 OPS. It's really good. It's going to take a minute. It's going to take him a while. I would actually say, how about this? I'm going to say I would go, and but see, like, here's why I'm so sure that I like Riley Greene more than I like O'Neill Cruz. When I'm looking at O'Neill Cruz and Josh Lowe, I'm like, they both could maybe. And I'm like, he's no way he's going to outperform Riley Greene in the major leagues this year. To me, Riley Greene is going to outperform Josh Lowe for sure. So that means, and I'm on the fence of O'Neill Cruz and Riley Greene going Riley Greene. So I'm definitely going Greene, Cruz. And here's what I would say. I would say that if playing time stays equal, I would take Abrams over Lowe. If playing time stays equal, I definitely think that Abrams will do better than Josh Lowe. How about you?
I think if you keep the playing time equal for this season only, I think Lowe returns a little more roto value than Abrams. I think Abrams is the better long-term player by far. I don't think either one of us have any qualms with that statement. But I think the short-term, I guess I'm looking at Abrams, and I think it's going to be a little while before he gets to the power at the big league level. I think Lowe's going to get to the power right away. I wonder if with the injuries, if the cloud of not getting sent back down, if that dissipates because it's a clear, like, hey, you're our guy now.
You're our guy. He's going to be starting. He might be starting in center field or right field. I mean, I don't know. We'd have to ask Colette about this, but is Phillips going to be in center? I mean, we're literally looking at a Rays, you know, quad A baseball team for the next couple of months, for the next period of time with Wander, well, until Wander Franco comes back. But like, they really don't have much. So Lowe is going to play. I just don't think he's going to hit. But I do hear what you're saying. Like, you're the guy. You can go 0-21 and you're still going to be starting for us. That will bring some relaxation to the game for him. And relaxation is the key to everything. The more calm you are, the clearer you think.
Not grinding the bat into sawdust every time something's not going well, I think is a good thing for
like what I saw him do last night, DVR. He did this last night. He struck out, and if you watch, he slammed his bat down and cursed so like angrily at himself. It's like, you're not going to hit that way. Cannot hit that way if you're putting that much pressure on yourself. You just can't. Now, it was the bottom of the ninth inning. They were down 4-2. It was a big spot. You know, and I don't want him to smile, but I also don't want him to. He's not going to succeed if he can't relax. And what I'm seeing is a guy who's not very relaxed yet. But he still has a positive war, even hitting 179. So he must be good in the field.
Let's get to a couple more things, a couple flyby injury notes to pass along. Nick Lodolo needs at least one more rehab start before he's back in the Reds rotation. So he is getting close. He's looking for some pitching help on the wire in a redraft league. There's a chance that Nick Lodolo got pushed off a few rosters, so keep an eye out. Make sure he's not available. Tristan Casas, not yet close to returning at AAA Worcester, so ankle injury for him, slowing him down right now. This one is one I wanted to ask you about. Bo Naylor got a bump up to AAA. And it seems like Bo Naylor would have. I like that James Anderson's rankings at RotoWire, the prospect rankings are on the player pages. You could see the historical graph of where a player has ranked. And Bo Naylor would have a pretty big downturn coming off of his 2021. He returned to AA to begin this season, and everything looks better. He had a 20.5% walk rate in 52 games at AA this season. Got the K rate down by 10 percentage points. He's at 20.9% there. Six homers, 11 for 14 as a base stealer. So a catcher that can run a little bit. Left-handed hitter. And some questions long-term about the hit tool. But good power. Decent speed. What do you think about this version of Bo Naylor now getting a look at AAA? And how much has this changed his keeper and dynasty outlook for you?
He's good, man. And, you know, the brother thing, I think matters because his brother's Josh Naylor, who's a little crazy, seems a little crazy, a little intense. Let's put it that way. Not crazy, but he's a little intense. But I like two brothers who play baseball together, William Contreras and William and Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah. like Taylor and Tyler Rogers. I like when brothers are competing against each other and making each other better. The younger brother tends to be better. Corey Seager, Kyle Seager, because they've got somebody to, you know, try to get to.
They got to play up. They play up with the older kid.
I played up with my older brother. He was 2.5 years older than me. Every single day we played baseball, and I was facing a kid who was 11 when I was 8. So that when I was facing 8-year-olds, it was a lot easier than facing 11-year-olds. And so Bo Naylor had that all the way through his development. I like Bo Naylor. I remember when Brett Sayre talked to me about Bo Naylor like 4 years ago. It was Brett or it was James, one of them, where it was just like, this kid. And it's like, oh, I guess not. And now it's like, oh, this kid. I mean, one thing I noticed this morning, I was doing a little deep dive on Francisco Alvarez because I own him with Steve Gardner in XFL. And I like Francisco, and Brett and I own him in this other league. There's going to be a point in about 3 years where everyone's going to have two good catchers. Do you know what I mean?
It looks good from a long-term perspective.
It really does.
I think I always sort of temper my expectations for the ceiling of catching prospects because, you know, we wanted Matt Wieters to be the next Mike Piazza. Yeah. Like we want that superstar catcher. We want more guys like that, the 25 to 30 home run catcher that also hits for average. And that's so physically demanding to play that position. A lot of those players fall short of the loftiest of expectations, even if they become very good players.
But I'll take a Travis d'Arnaud who'll hit you 20 home runs with a 256 average, right?
Sure.
I mean, yeah. I'll take that as a really good number one catcher, frankly. And I just think that we're going to see a lot of them. I think every team has a catcher who they're excited about, pretty much. And some teams have like three, you know, like if you look at the Blue Jays with Kirk and with Jansen and Gabriel Moreno. I mean, that's three catchers who should be starting somewhere in the major leagues on a daily basis. And that's just on one team, right?
Boy.
I mean, and then the A's have Soderstrom. They have Sean Murphy. I mean, it's just like there's a lot of good catching going on. Right? I don't know if Soderstrom's going to end up behind the plate, but there's just so, and he's on the rundown here. There's so many good catchers right now. It's just very, it's very exciting. I like catcher. That was my position growing up. So I really like catchers. And I do like Bo Naylor. Do you like Bo Naylor? Do you think he's going to be something for us?
I do. I think it's interesting because I remember back in the RDI days, the RotoWire Dynasty mm-hmm. Invitational days, that was a single catcher league. But it was deep, 20 teams. I remember Will Smith was available on waivers. This would have been probably 2018. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's right.
2018. So the latest, in a single catcher league because he took a little bit of a winding road in the minors production-wise. It took a little longer than expected for him to be the hitter that he is now. Yeah, 2018 must have been the year before he debuted. Anyway, I think things can click even differently for a catcher than for other prospects. I think we're also dealing with prolonged fallout from the canceled 2020 minor league season. That is wreaking havoc on player development for hitters and pitchers at all different levels. There are still guys that are either because of health reasons or just because of that lost development time, skipping levels, whatever it might be. There are guys still figuring things out from a full year with a lot less baseball or very different looking baseball, right? Maybe it was some kind of instructs or some of the guys that got invited to alternate sites and those types of things, right? It's going to be a couple more years before that's totally like pushed out of our analysis. I think that's going to help us to understand some of the strange things, the rapid improvement or the massive decline where guys were good pre-pandemic, missed the season and just never quite found it again. I think we're going to have some players that turn out that way too.
I have a different viewpoint of that season and what I think is going to happen for players because of it. I actually thought about this morning and thinking about Francisco Alvarez because he in 2020 went to the alternate site. He was like 18 years old and he spent 5 months learning the game. And there's a piece of me that thinks that there might be upside there long term. Like if I was running a Major League Baseball team, do I want to take a season of just development where you're not like traveling all the time, where half of your year is spent on a bus going from one town to another and playing games at night and resting during the day and playing games at night? Might it be good to just like for actors, I'm for people who have not heard me before, I've been a professional actor for 25 years on a short sabbatical. But one of the things that you do as a young actor is you go and you train for a couple of years. Like if you're good, you go and you train. You don't go on stage. You just practice and learn your craft. And I think for someone like Corbin Carroll, who also lost last year, that year, 2020, was so valuable for those guys because they got to really learn the game because they didn't have a chance to play. They just had a chance to practice. Anyway, that's just something that I'm not sure that 2020, we always talk about it as being this thing that has hurt the development of players. I just wonder if maybe that's not true. Maybe they've learned something from that 5 months that they wouldn't have gotten on the road. Does that sound crazy? Does that make any sense?
No, but I think the group of players that got a chance to go to the alternate site and be around a large group of big leaguers, that's a shorter list. Though I do think those players had a different experience.
Okay.
As someone who has spent 0 days working in Major League Baseball, I think the player development process from a logistical perspective is arcane and flat out stupid.
That's what I'm saying. I think that this changed the conversation. I think this, if I were sitting down with a major league team saying, do you have any thoughts? I had a lot of thoughts. Here's one of them. Take your prospects, take your top guys, and instead of at least for a couple of months in a season, bring them to the alternate site and work them 10 hours a day. Because those guys were getting, you know, they were like training. They would get up at 7:30 in the morning and they would take BP for 2 hours. Then they would work on outfield for 3 hours. And then in the afternoon, they would scrimmage against better players. I don't know. I just think that there's upside to that. I think that you can develop. Now, what you're saying about the guys who didn't get to go to the alternate site, I think that's true. But I think the kids who are the top prospects, who they were like, no, we're going to keep these guys, I think those kids might end up developing better because of that time. Yeah?
I think it also depends on how the player learns. I think seeing a lot of extra reps against the same players, some guys could just sort of get bored with it and not keep digging into the problems and just fall into a pattern. But others could keep playing the game and say, no, I got to figure this out. Or getting really granular with how this big league pitcher in my own organization is now pitching me this way. And he was pitching me this way. I think it can work both ways. But I think it was more good than bad to be a prospect at the alternate site versus the unknown. And those situations vary so much for players who were in the States, players who were in other countries.
Right. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Facilities they had, like all that stuff. Those are variables that are all over the map.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just talking about that Francisco Alvarez's, the Corbin Carrolls, the guys who were under the best coaching that you could have, who were working 9-10 hours a day for 6 months straight. Those guys learn things that are going to stay with them. Like Corbin Carroll, I remember he would go to the major league games in Arizona and watch all the games sitting next to the scout.
Yeah.
That was his choice. But he would go to every game and watch, and the scout would say, you see what that guy did? You see what this guy did? You see what that guy did? It's an apprenticeship that's not part of baseball. I don't know if this is what people want to listen to, but this is just something that interesting to me. I mean, this kind of cool stuff.
So we're going to put the level roundup for low A on hold for next week. Construction is about to start outside my window, and at that point, the prospect pod will become unlistenable for noise reasons. So the last thought I have here, and then we can take it out, is if we were starting professional baseball from scratch today, I don't think we would have four affiliated teams scattered around to other corners of the country where a group of coaches who were not on your full-time big league staff were responsible for their development. I don't think we would do it that way. I think we would have something that resembles more of an academy sort of situation.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, in Milwaukee, you'd have an academy for the Brewers prospects, and there'd be different types of facilities within a few hours where they'd go play players from the other teams' academies, and the training would be centralized. The access to food and appropriate place to sleep, right? We read all these stories about the poor treatment of minor leaguers. The reporting on that is phenomenal. It just never makes sense to me that teams would want players to be worried about housing, not sleep comfortably, not eat well, not have access to the proper facilities and all the information they want. Like, why would you not want to treat your employees in this instance, especially? Why would you not want to treat these guys better than you do? It baffles me. But the hard thing about this, I'm also someone who thinks that people need to see baseball to fall in love with baseball. If you go to this academy system, you take minor league baseball away from even more communities. We've already lost like 42 minor league teams with the latest round of changes. I don't know how you rectify that. I don't know what the true answer is there. Maybe it's independent ball finds a way to replace that in a lot of those places. And then double A, triple A, maybe those cities are where some of the academy teams play, even though they're based out of a nearby location. I don't know. There's some sort of workaround here. But all of this is to say that player development, to me, it's still far away from where it's going. There's still a lot more that can be done to make this more consistent and to just optimize it so guys reach their full potential. I think you're making a great point. The Carrolls, the Alvarezes, I think Wander was at the alternate site. Plenty of other players got that opportunity. I think that ended up being a net positive for a lot of those players compared to the alternative, because the alternative is just so poorly managed.
Manfred, can we get a meeting? We need a, Van Riper and Kahn. We want a meeting.
I hope that works. I will not be particularly optimistic that it will. No, but
probably not.
Hopefully everyone enjoyed this conversation. Ian, thank you again for stepping in for Al. And even though we betrayed our friend and co-host on Wednesday, Nando DeFino.
Yes, we'll hear about that tomorrow.
We'll hear all about that. If you'd like a subscription to The Athletic, you can get one for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. That's going to do it for this episode of The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're back with you on Wednesday with Under the Radar.
See you then.